it is illustrated in an absurd way.
Yeah.
You know, they're absurd scenes. Yeah. I mean, they're hilarious with these monkeys running around Changi Airport in their jock straps. But why did you do that?
Because I wanted to make a wild book. So it's more like a melting pot and a wild melting pot, because that's, I think, what Singapore needs in terms of literature and in terms of creative thinking to move forward.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to the Asian Bookshelf, where we explore Southeast Asia's literary landscape. If you're a discerning reader, perhaps even an inspiring writer, you're in exactly the right place. We interview acclaimed writers and key industry figures to explore Southeast Asia's literature, and we take a deep dive into its narrative elements, characters, themes, and emerging trends. The Asian Bookshelf is produced and co-hosted by acclaimed writer John Gresham, presenter Devika Misra, and myself, writer T.A. Morton. We are all Singapore-based, but of Irish, Australian, and Indian heritage, and bring our own unique insights and experiences to Southeast Asia's stories. Please join us on the Asian Bookshelf, home to words and voices from Asia today. In this episode, episode 5 of the Asian Bookshelf, we will discuss Gus, the life and opinions of the last Raffles Banded Langur, which was a finalist for the 2023 Epigram Books Fiction Prize and is now in the bookstores. This novel follows Gus, a Raffles Banded Langur who talks. And as readers, we follow him as he strives to find his way back to Bukit Timah Nature Reserve amidst a crumbling Singapore. This story unfolds as he navigates through a deteriorating city alongside characters like Charlie and Juliet, each facing their own challenges and quest in this dystopian, ego-fiction adventure. So today we are delighted to have our very own John Gresham here with us. Here's a writer we can finally put on the spot.
Don't blame us for all that's wrong with human society. Don't blame us for the world people created. It's not as though everything was hunky-dory before we came along. It's not our fault the economy tanked and inflation rose sky high. We weren't the ones to chop down the binjai trees along Kampung Bahru Road. We didn't cull the otters gorging on koi. We didn't steal food from the mouths of the cardboard uncles rummaging inside wheelie bins. We didn't close the semiconductor factories or leave garbage rotting in the streets. We didn't beat domestic helpers or make them drink bleach. We didn't wring the necks of jungle fowl or slaughter wild boar or poison civets as the dirty orange haze from Sumatra hung heavy in the sky.
You say, or I should say Gus says, don't blame us for all that's wrong with human society. Don't blame us for the world people created, the binjai trees, inflation, the economy, the trucks with the immigrants. I mean, this is like Billy Joel's song.
our listeners probably are too young to
remember it.
To remember Billy Joel.
We didn't start a fire.
I love that song, man.
We didn't start a fire. So John, I mean, are you taking on the whole world's problems? I mean, what is this rant?
I guess it's his ranting speech. This is the Monkey King's ranting speech early on in the book. It's really about many of the things that I felt and experienced in contemporary Singapore that was sort of circulating around social media and discussions and things that were on people's minds. And this is around February 2021 when I first sort of brainstormed all the ideas behind there. So it's really, it's nature saying, we didn't stuff the world up. We're not the ones with agency. So don't blame us for the consequences. And he is, in a sense, just giving this unrestrained expression of the way things are. And it's a fictional, the whole novel is a fictional imagining of nature's response to that, the way things are and the bleak nature of the world.
So did you mean it as a warning to humans?
I really wrote it just to be wild. I guess it is. It's a plea. There is a plea in there. Yeah. A warning sounds a little too didactic, although I can see that people read it that way. Because it moves away from being didactic to being to try and really make the personal stories work rather than preach. So while at the start you have the rant of the Monkey King and the reasons why they're revolting, it moves into people's, this is Charlie the clown auditor and Juliet Salonga, the grieving nurse, and the other characters, their own personal goals and desires and dreams and fears and anxieties, and it moves into that. So it's more about putting a lot of pressure, a dystopian pressure on characters and seeing what they do, both human and non-human characters.
But John, my beef is, have you taken on too much, too many themes? The internet on the one hand, climate on the other, the, you know, loss, family, the whole motivation of Gus is to find his family.
Power struggles too, yeah.
Power struggles.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I don't, again,
father-son relationship. I mean, it's just so much. And it is illustrated in an absurd way.
Yeah.
You know, they're absurd scenes. Yeah. I mean, they're hilarious with these monkeys are running around Changi Airport in their jock straps. But why did you do that? Do you not think that'll be a dilution?
No, because I don't think the novelist's role is to provide solutions. I think a dystopian novel, an eco-thriller in the time that we're in is about we are facing crisis and putting people under pressure, how will they respond? So to do that, you need to cover nature. And if you're going to cover nature, you need to cover power and politics and systems and the way people relate to each other and how they're going to relate after a dystopian crisis. So it is a lot because it's wild. And the other motivation is because I wanted to make a wild book. I didn't want to sort of compartmentalize issues and say, oh, yeah, let's deal with a father. Let's have a father-son novel, divorced from politics or social realism or anything. I wanted to throw everything in and just explore the characters and focus on the characters. And the whole big themes and everything comes out of that. So it's more like a melting pot and a wild melting pot because that's, I think, what Singapore needs in terms of literature and in terms of creative thinking to move forward, to move into how it's going to survive.
But it's the very near future.
Yeah.
So what was the reasoning behind that? Because, I mean, dystopian fiction, I mean, yeah, normally like, 100 years' time. But is it so pressing that you think that we need to...
Look, I do think it is. I do think things are pressing. I do think, and you've seen it over the rise of the far right and nationalism and climate change. And you do see that politically and culturally and economically, the gap between rich and poor is widening. You have the climate crisis. You have a crisis of faith amongst young people. You see the sentiment regarding issues like Gaza, Palestine now. You see the sensibility of young people is very different. There are a lot more PC than perhaps our generation are.
Yeah.
And their concern is about buying a house and having enough money to buy a house because housing prices have gone through the roof. Mm. And those things are all foreseeable after the interest rates were lowered after the 2008 crisis. But I think, we have a crisis in the world both environmentally because of climate crisis. And because we're still not weaning off fossil fuels fast enough and because we're on track for 1.5 to 2.5 degrees increase and that will affect people as it is now, as we know now, for the last year, we're almost hitting a record every single month and the oceans are warming much faster than before and killing off coral reefs. So there is that sense of crisis. There is that sense that our political systems, our economic and cultural institutions, the rule of law and international law are breaking down. There's a lack of confidence in our political leaderships, and the economics is resulting in the gap between rich and poor widening, where sort of we in the sort of middle class to upper middle class can be quite happy because we're, you know, materially quite well off, but it's harder for our kids. It's harder for young people nowadays, and you can understand the disquiet that they feel at the future that we've given them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So all of that sort of is the swirling around beneath, and that's why the immediacy is, rather than make it more abstract, it's more practically relevant now because we need to change now.
I thought the motivation to portray Singapore was to show its vulnerability.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
portray Singapore under attack was to show its vulnerability. Yeah, was there an element of that?
Yeah, yeah. And again, it goes back to things like the Second World War, this presumption. You know, they were having advertising for ballroom events, you know, the week before the Japanese were coming down the Malay Peninsula, or even as they were coming down the Malay Peninsula, and even after the big, you know, British naval vessel had been sunk. So there was a presumption that our life will continue, like particularly amongst the colonials. And I think there's that sense here. And it's also the sense that when things collapse, it doesn't all happen all at once and there's a nice cutoff point. Different things collapse bit by bit. It's like boiling a frog. So I try to get an element of that in there as well.
So you're drawing that parallel between 2026 and 1939?
42, yeah.
Okay, 42
when the Japanese came.
Now, within all those themes that came up during the story, there was one about the loss of communication, which really resonated with me, especially about how we communicate today. You know, within the demise of Singapore, there'll be no Wi-Fi, everyone. And who are we without our screens? Mm. You know, we're disconnected from the world like no one cares. And are we too focused too much on ourselves? We've kind of given up on collective society. And I know you mentioned before that you wanted readers to make up their own minds. But I would like to ask you, what was your motivation in, like, making us focus on that lack of how we will be without?
Because I do think, you know, social media, the way we use it, each individually has rewired our minds, has rewired us, and with many adverse impacts, not just Cambridge Analytica and Facebook and the influence over elections. But, you know, it is being weaponized. It rewards an instant reaction to an image, to an emotion and feeling. Yeah. The act of scrolling and glancing at things, you know, our attention spans, our concentration, it is changing and reducing. So rather than step back and try and think deeply about things, we're more inclined to react. And the people that obviously own social media know that, so they're provoking it. So hate has been weaponized, division has been weaponized because it makes money. It's what stimulates, you know, the dopamine triggers. It's what really gets us going. So I think the motivation for focusing on social media is that I think we do have to think collectively about it, and we do have to recognize that our only way out of the crisis or the challenges that we face as a culture and as humanity and nature is through community and collective action rather than individualistic or reaction to emotion or image or just saying, going back into identity silos and stovepipes of tribalism. That does not work. We need to reach out. We need to build community, and we need to recognize that nature, while it's obviously different from us, it is part of us. We're all one system. And if we destroy huge parts of the system as we are doing, it has a feedback effect negatively on us, both social media-wise and natural-wise.
You've attributed human characteristics to an animal, which in this case is Gus. But it's not just Gus. There are many characters and animals in this book, and as well as insects, that are actually able to talk and to read. And in fact, I feel like that most of us, even as children, have probably looked at our pets and looked around and thought, like, well, I wonder what they're thinking, and I wonder if they could speak, what would they say? And I, you know, the birds even in the trees, and what do they think about us, you know, looking down on us humans? But I feel like that's a very human kind of egocentric point of view. Why did you choose just to tell it through Gus's voice? Because I think personally, I would have loved to know Charlie's interpretation of what was happening, because obviously I'm human and I relate to a human, even though Gus is very relatable. So why did you choose to do that?
Why do we talk? We talk to connect like you. We talk to express ourselves, to woo mates, to influence others. When we primates learned to speak, we became rivals in selfishness and greed. Thanks for that.
I wanted it to be wild, and I did want it to be unique as something in Singapore literature that is not just human-centered. So it was good to have a mischievous, adventurous, but very sad, traumatized character, the animal Gus. And I thought that was interesting to try and imagine what animals would think of humans and the way they were treated by humans.
So I wanted to ask you how much you were inspired by their writing. I could see some parallels between the Odyssey, actually. You mentioned Ithaca towards the end.
Yeah. Well, that's from the Thumbu. That's from the Merlin poem, isn't it?
Yeah. That I was wondering, like, were you heavily influenced by that kind of hero journey?
Well, I've always been aware of the hero journey, but the hero journey has also got its hang-ups as well, and its sort of male individuality, the centering around a male individual. Mm. So I didn't want it necessarily to be a male individual. Sort of, and basically, in the end, Gus fails, really. Charlie fails a lot of the time. And the hero of this is really the community builder, the collective builder, Juliet. And obviously, that's a bit of a spoiler for people, so we should probably say that.
No, don't say anything.
But that's kind of like an anti-Joseph Campbell, anti-hero's journey. I mean, I was influenced by lots of books about animals and their interiority, things like Laura Jean McKay's Animals in That Country, George Saunders' Fox 8, Kids Johnson, 26 Monkeys in also The Abyss and Trickster Dogs. There's a great Filipino graphic novel by Jerry Alanguilan about a chicken, Elmer, that's really, it's in the shop. It's a wonderful book. And again, I think J.M. Coetzee's, Elizabeth Costello, and then those dystopian, contemporary dystopian novels like Station 11 and Severance, Ling Ma, and older ones like Children of Men and even Day of the Triffids, I kind of like also liked as well, influenced it.
It is a very local book, very much rooted in Singapore. You mention a lot of local names of roads and even local writers like Edwin Thumbu. Do you think that how would this affect the transferability of the appeal of this book to a larger audience?
I think, you know, if you look at, you know, any other good novel, it's from James Joyce to Midnight's Children to, you know, even the more commercially ones like the One Day guy, the David Nichols guy that's just been on Netflix. Everything is rooted in local detail. There's no, the universality comes from dealing with your characters well and providing details that provoke the imagination, and the universalism and the way it will translate from the local to the international will happen if you write well and if your craft is good enough.
Although it was really sad and perhaps realistic kind of view of our society, you know, John, do you think that we need to laugh more at ourselves?
I need to laugh more. I'm a very serious person.
No. Are you really?
Yes. I'm a very strict. Ask my wife and my kid. They're always saying that. No, we try and provoke each other to laugh. I think I do. I think, you know, humour and laughter is really essential for sanity, for people's sanity.
For me, John, this book is absurd. I mean, the descriptions are ludicrous.
Who do
you think, as you write the book, were you thinking of an average reader?
No, I was thinking of what would amuse myself if I was reading it. What did I like to read?
As I see these monkeys rampaging, running amok, I should say, all yes. over Singapore and the rail corridor. I think many people could see this being converted into a computer game or a cartoon, some kind of graphic novel. How do you see it?
I mean, all that. I think I'd love it if somebody else took their own view of the own pictures in their mind and made another into another form, like a graphic novel or a game, as you say, would be wonderful.
A game would be really good. I'd love it.
A Grand Theft Auto,
yeah,
but based in Singapore and with monkeys going and animals going crazy.
Well, I
would be incredible.
It would
and
be.
you could choose to be the Monkey King.
That'd be so good.
not poor old Gus.
Chicken.
Okay. Well, I could see it as a play, you know, with the monkeys rampaging bras from Takashimaya amongst an audience.
Yeah.
I'm going to thank you here, John, for being here today
in
a different role as our writer on the spot. We do hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Asian Bookshelf and will join us again in a fortnight when we will be delving into the role of Singapore's Book Council with its executive director, William Puan. Thank you for listening. Do contact us at contact@theasianbookshelf.com or via Facebook or Instagram. Many thanks for listening to The Asian Bookshelf, home to words and voices from Asia today.